Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
Hey, welcome to the program this morning, 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin, and Carrie's over there hiding behind it. I think Carrie can't get her headphones to work right. Is that what's going on?
That is correct.
Yeah, all right. Well,
good
Carrie,
morning.
We'll work on it. Carrie Rathje is here, as well as Doug Bennett from the Washington County Water Conservancy District. You know, I never thought about the name, Water Conservancy District. That means we're supposed to be conserving, right, Doug?
Just using it wisely, making sure that it meets the needs of the community and deciding what are those important needs.
Okay. Doug is the conservation manager at the Conservancy District, right? I mean, it all goes together, right, Doug?
All the water?
All the conserving stuff.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, I think a lot of people don't think about it, but water is truly the fuel of our entire economy, our quality of life. It is tied into so many aspects of our lives. Everybody takes it quite seriously when there's not enough to go around. But I think sometimes we take it for granted how many things we do with water, that it creates the jobs, that it helps us derive our paychecks and feed our families, and that it grows the trees in our neighborhoods. So many things. So
the number one, so if we made a list, the number one, maybe one through three biggest water users in our house, I would think that maybe showers would be up there, toilets, kitchen sink, but I haven't even hit number one yet, have I?
No, you haven't. Well, it depends, Andy. If you want to talk about in the house,
the house.
But if you talk about the property where we live, the number one water user, if you have a lawn, is going to be your lawn. And grass. Believe it or not, it only takes 350 square feet of grass to be the equivalent water use of what a person would use inside of the house over the course of a year.
Wow. So we love our lawns. It used to be a sign of affluence. If you can afford a lawn, if you could afford to grow a crop, which is what a lawn is, without needing whatever the crop produces, which obviously a lawn doesn't produce a crop, then it was a sign of affluence in Europe, where most of us came from, and it kind of, I guess, translated over to coming to the United States and going, all right, if I'm going to have a big lawn, that means I got money, right?
At some point, and with some people. But the other thing is, sometimes we just lack imagination, right? So if somebody gives us a big old rectangle of land and our house is in the middle, and we're like, easiest, fastest thing to do is to put a lawn on there and create instant appeal. So a lawn and some trees, but those plants, as you pointed out, don't come from this region, and so they use extraordinary amounts of water. We're looking at somewhere between 50 and 60 gallons of water per square foot per year. So think every little square foot, about the size of a sheet of paper, is going to use two bathtubs full of water over the course of a year.
Wow. We're talking eight. I mean, that big. Yeah, that's not very big at all. Wow. I had someone, I can't believe that they actually said this to me, and I was just kind of sitting there smiling and trying not to agree or disagree, but Carrie, I'll ask you and Doug both. He said, you know, I've been here for X amount of years, I think it's 40 years or something like that. He says, all these newcomers, I think we should charge them a lot of money for water. He said, but I've been here a long time. Why are they charging me so much? That's not fair that I get charged so much for water. You guys have any thoughts on what that person told me?
I think it's important to point out first that all the municipalities here, including and the water district, are all not for profit. So the money collected from the customers is only enough to cover the operations costs. And those costs are climbing all the time. So whether it be the fuel that goes into the trucks, the vehicles, the employees, all those costs are going up. But one that's really climbing is infrastructure. So infrastructure, the need to be able to go in and replace some of those pipes that might be 50 or 70 years old and be able to go replace them. Some of those projects have tripled in cost over the last decade. And so the monies that are being collected are just paying the cost of operating and maintaining the system. They also all use tiered rates, meaning that the people that are using low and moderate amounts of water are typically going to get the lower rates, and the people using large amounts of water are going to pay the higher rates. And so those rates are designed to try and encourage people to use exorbitant amounts of water, to use less because they'll get a fat bill. Sometimes people don't know what a lot of water is. I mean, we talk to our neighbors. We might go, man, I got a $200 water bill. But we don't have a good grasp on what it means to use 400,000 gallons of water over the course of a year and what's normal. And typically a lot of houses are operating in the 100 to 150,000 gallons per year. And on that same street, you'll have a neighbor that uses three times that much. Wow. But probably doesn't have much to show for it, right? They have a similar lot to somebody that overwaters their landscaping or has broken sprinkler heads. And so it's putting it in perspective is really important for people to figure out what could they be doing.
So the concept, that the idea right now is that someone that uses a lot of water is someone that doesn't care. They're doing it on purpose. They don't care about the money. It doesn't matter to them. But what you're saying, Doug, a little bit is sometimes it's not that they don't care. It's that they don't necessarily know or maybe care enough to figure it out.
Yeah. So, one of the things people don't understand is a sprinkler system by itself is terribly inefficient. Mm. So we're just throwing water droplets through the air and hoping they hit their targets and applies it evenly. And I like to make the analogy of, imagine you wanted to paint the inside of your house and you gave a five-year-old some rollers, brushes, and a five-gallon bucket of paint, right?
Oh, man.
That's kind of how a sprinkler system is. You're gonna have way too much paint in some places, not nearly enough in others. And those spots that don't get enough coverage from the sprinkler system, obviously the grass looks bad. So you get a brown spot in the middle of your lawn, and you're like, well, I'm not watering enough. Well, by the time you make that weak spot in the irrigation pattern green, when you make that spot green, you've now overwatered 80% of the yard.
You're growing mushrooms in other parts of the yard.
So sprinkler systems need a lot of maintenance. They're inherently somewhat inefficient, even when they're properly designed. Some places are getting three times as much water as other places, but it's that dry spot that's driving people's reaction.
Now, I didn't mean to excuse everybody that does operate on the other assumption, which is that they don't care. They're going to have whatever it is they want, and they don't care about the money. I guess there's a few of those too, right, Doug?
Some people will say that.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately people want to know how to do better. And in fact, we at the district teach a class on lawn care. So we know that grass does belong in a lot of areas. We want our children to be able to play on it. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are going to have some grass at their house, even if they embrace desert landscaping in other areas. And so knowing that that's the most water-intensive part of their landscape, we want to teach people how do they get the most out of it with the fewest resources going into it. So when my kids were growing, I don't have any lawn grass at my house now, but it's my wife and I, we're retired, and we're really into desert adapted plants, and we really enjoy our garden. But when I had children, heck yeah, there was a tall fescue lawn underneath their playset, and I managed that using all the guidelines of the water agency where I lived, and it was a beautiful lawn, and it just means paying attention. But obviously, I got a ton of expertise in this, and most people don't.
Yeah.
A lot of people can tell you they know how to turn the controller on or off. There are a few people that would say if they wanted it to go off, they'd just pull the plug.
Yeah.
Right? They're not sure which buttons to push. So we can help with those things, too.
Nice. That's good to hear. So Zach told me once, and I think it's true, but maybe you can give us some numbers to involved with this. Say I had a 18 by 24 pool. That pool with a cover actually uses less water than if I had an 18 by 24 patch of lawn, actual grass. Is that true?
If you were using a cover alone, used judiciously, it doesn't have to be on all the time, but a cover alone applied judiciously, I guess. Not everybody wants it on all summer long because the water can get quite warm. That will cut the evaporation in half. And so, yes, doing that water surface area has about an equivalent demand as a lawn area. And then you've got decking around the pool, right?
Yeah,
that's
a lot of it,
low
yeah.
water use. The biggest threat in a swimming pool, really, there are two things. One is about 30% of swimming pools have leaks in the shell.
Ooh.
So they're continuously seeping water through the shell, through fixtures, through some of the plumbing of the system. The other one is lack of use. And that sounds kind of weird, right? Because I know when you get in the pool, you always drag some water out. People splash water out of the pool. But I want people to think about efficiency in the context of use. What did I get for my water?
Mm.
And so to me, the biggest waste of pool water is a pool that somebody just stares at through a window of their home, right? The yeah. best use of pool water is having people in there frolicking and having a good time mm-hmm. because now you're getting some value out of that water.
It's kind of like, you know, we have our realtor friend on occasionally, Jeremy Larkin, and he talks about a pool and he says, did the pool improve the value of my home? Yeah, slightly, but not as much as you spent on the pool. But did you get something out of the pool? Is it there just to look at? Because if that's why you bought it for the wrong reason and you're not going to get your money back. But if you bought it and used it and enjoyed it and spent time in it, that's a whole different animal. And I can tell you, the Griffin household, my wife is a fish. She loves swimming. She would be in the pool probably 18 hours a day if she was allowed to.
Oh, that's great. You know, something I learned, I mean, I've not ever had a swimming pool, but I did survey a bunch of swimming pool owners for a project that I was running one time.
Mm-hmm.
And they told us that they use their pool on average 10, that somebody in their household will get in the pool on average 10 to 15 times per year. So that means even when you look at the 5 month swim season, the summer season, 9 out of every 10 days, nobody gets in that pool. So
it's terrible.
And that's yeah. and those are the days where you should consider having the cover on. It's not pretty. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. The cover is not attractive. It's not fun to look at. But it's going to cut evaporation in half. It can save you more than 10,000 gallons of water per year.
So one of the things that people maybe don't know about, you have to have in St. George City, you'll have to have a 6-foot wall or fence around your property if you own a pool. If your fence is smaller than that, you have to have it covered unless you're using the pool. That's one of the weird rules in St. George City.
Yeah.
But our fence is only 4.5 feet tall, so our pool is covered. Unless we're in the pool, it's covered. We don't.
Yeah.
And you know, the liability, homeowner and a pool. And I mean, I was told once if you left the cover open and someone came in illegally onto your property and used your pool and then drowned, they actually can have a case for suing you. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's definitely a motivation to want to make sure to keep your pool covered.
Oh, yeah, it is a hazard, especially if you have little kids on site.
So, yeah, for
something
sure.
to keep an eye on. I do want to point out, relative to safety, the kind of cover you're talking about is one of those that people could literally walk on.
Yeah,
right?
It holds up to 300 pounds.
It's,
yeah,
it's high tech. So don't count on the bubble cover, the floating type pool cover,
right,
is actually usually a safety hazard. Because if somebody were to fall in and slip under that thing, you may not even see them in there, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, good point.
That there would be no safety measure in that. So
we're talking Water Conservancy today with Carrie, who's been our silent partner so far. Hi, Carrie. You doing okay?
I'm doing great.
Okay,
thank you.
Good. And Doug Bennett, both from the Washington County Water Conservancy District. Zach is off doing other things today, and he's out of state, isn't he?
He had some meetings this afternoon. So
all right.
Well, he ditched us, but we're in good hands with Doug over here. I won't mention that he stated he was retired. We're not letting him retire.
He's retired-ish. Right. Yeah. He only works 8 hours a day.
Trying to be useful. After this, it's over to Home Depot to help direct people to aisle 18. So
okay. Smart irrigation timers.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what's over there. But
is that really where all the water stuff is on 18? I don't know.
That's where all the retired guys go when they retire. So to help people to help people find things in the big box store.
So you mentioned before we went on the air that May, we've gotten some moisture in May, which everybody's like, yay, moisture, we're all caught up. We're not caught up. We're way behind still.
Yeah,
but it did help. Tell us about May and the encouraging things that you saw there.
Yeah, so I want to start by reminding people we had the worst winter snowpack in 132 years of record.
Wow.
So to remember, people have already forgotten, I think, but you remember looking up at Pine Valley Mountain and there was just almost nothing on it. And when we did get a little snow, it would be gone pretty quickly.
Yeah.
About 75% of our water supply comes from that snow melt runoff. And it just didn't happen this year. The Santa Clara is running, which comes out of Pine Valley, is supposed to run at 20-some-odd percent of what would be considered normal. And the Virgin is running in the 30s, like 33, 35% of what would be considered normal.
Wow.
And just to remind people, that is our whole water supply. We're highly reliant on that. The good news is 23 was so wet that we filled up Sand Hollow, we filled up Quail Creek, we filled up Gunlock, right? All those reservoirs got filled up, but they're like canteens. So now we're drinking out of them until next winter's snowpack, and we certainly hope it'll be a good one. The good news is that we did have a wet May, which is unusual. May and June are usually the dry season for us before the monsoons hit. In May, we had two consecutive days where St. George Weather Station recorded 0.49 inches, so almost half an inch, 2 days in a row. But I was telling you, Andy, I was all excited about rain, but I still have stress, even when it rains. You know why?
Why?
Because there are still people that ran their sprinklers in the middle of a week where we got an inch of rain. And they're still drinking down Sand Hollow. They're still drinking down Quail. And so we really need people to go out and shut things off when we do get rainfall, because that's the only way to capitalize on it. And even better, to get one of these nearly free smart irrigation controllers where you can set it up and it will know that it's raining and it will turn it off. So you'll just get a message on your phone that says, hey, I turned off your controller because the weather forecast says it's raining in Ivins, and I can override it. We all know sometimes we go, yeah, it didn't rain at my house.
Yeah.
But that right. happens. But a smart controller can handle a lot of that for you and make some of the adjustments for the weather.
I was going to use the sloth, the laziness excuse. I don't want to go out to my garage and program and push a button. But you're saying it doesn't even have to be that.
Well, it can be two ways. You could either push a button, but it'd be on your phone. And so if I was in Idaho on vacation and something happened, I could turn off my irrigation. I could even turn it off. Neighbor calls me and goes, hey, I don't know what happened, but there's water gushing out of a pipe in your front yard. I'd be able to turn that off from my phone.
Wow.
If I knew that it was raining where I was, I could turn it off from my phone. But I could also have a setting that says, if it's raining, I want you to turn it off and notify me that you did that.
Hmm.
And then if I, for some reason, find out it's one of those storms that skipped my house, right? We all get those. Then I can turn it back on and say, I don't want a rain delay. I need the water to continue.
So how do we get one of these, Carrie? Do you know how to?
Sure. Yeah. The state recently increased the rebate to $100 per device. And so you can go to WCWCD.gov, as in Washington County Water Conservancy District.gov, and get information on the smart controller rebate as well as other rebate programs that we currently offer to the community.
Doug said it was nearly free.
Nearly free. The particular model I use costs just a little more than $100.
And you get $100 back, and so you're, and like you said, nearly free. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, and it's a great tool.
And I'm asking for myself because I want one of those. That sounds really cool.
Well, we'll help you, hook you up.
Nice. I love it. Just got a text in. Let's see. Can you ask the Water Conservatory? Can we ask you guys that you have on what we said? We only get water from Santa Clara and the Virgin River. Is there any groundwater in this area? I've heard that there's a lot of groundwater, especially up underneath the Winchester Hills area, Diamond Valley. It goes on. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but
well, the groundwater is from those same systems, right? So the when you talk about the Virgin River Basin, you're talking about the groundwater that's recharged from those same rivers. So groundwater can be depleted. We do have significant stores of groundwater, and the biggest one is over under Sand Hollow Reservoir. So right. Sand Hollow is not only a lake, it's also a recharge system. There's a huge amount of groundwater stored underneath Sand Hollow Lake. But when people think there's more water than what we already know of, the state engineer says there is not.
Mm-hmm.
And the state engineer, if somebody says, oh, I heard there's, you know, like a huge, vast, underground, untapped aquifer, the way that works is you have to go to the state and prove it with data. with a study of some kind, and then the state engineer will consider allowing you to withdraw it. If you just start over pumping groundwater and the expectation that there might be more there, not only are you violating state law because you don't have rights to be able to do that, but in most cases you're actually mining away the groundwater, and that can be extremely harmful.
Wow. Okay. Rest of this, I heard that a friend of mine years ago found a humongous river up by Brookside area. I don't know if he was telling the truth or not, but is there a huge aquifer under that area? I never heard that. No.
No, I'm not familiar with that. But again, everywhere I've ever lived, Andy, in the Southwest, there was always lore about this amazing, you know, it's not much different than the lore you hear about. I heard there's a cache of Spanish gold somewhere in these hills.
Yeah, movies, right?
Yeah. So there's always some of that. And that kind of lore surrounds water as well. Believe me, nobody would like it more to discover an untapped, reliable, sustainable supply of water than the Washington County Water Conservancy District. So if these people know of these things and they're hiding them from us, give me a call.
Tell somebody. I saw a note on Facebook the other day from Colorado City, Hilldale area about wells breaking down again. Do you guys know anything about that? What's going on up there?
No, that'd probably be a Zach thing. Zach's tapped into everybody.
Okay.
So Zach, I guess it goes again. I think, you know, when we were here before, there was some discussion about Apple Valley and some of the challenges that they had.
Right.
But one thing about water infrastructure is it's critically important, right? But it's often unseen. People don't have any idea how much infrastructure, pipes, pump stations, power supplies, all these things that have to be put together to provide their water. And so, it becomes transparent when something breaks and somebody doesn't have water, or there's an impaired supply, or they have to cut back because we can't produce as much. Then it becomes an issue for folks. I do like to ask people, though. If I get a group of people together, I say, raise your hands if you remember the last time the power went out at your house. And like everybody raises their
hand, of course,
right?
Yeah, sure.
At my house, it happens probably once a month, very briefly, just long enough to mess up the clocks on every appliance, right?
Yeah.
But it goes out briefly. And then I ask them, keep your hands up if you remember the last time you had no water at your home. And all the hands go down, right?
Nobody.
So we have very, very reliable water supply, but there's a lot of stuff going on under the ground.
A lot of behind-the-scenes action. We're going to talk a little bit more about that. I got to get a break in here, guys. We're going to talk a little bit more about the behind-the-scenes stuff in a minute, infrastructure. And what happened with that land sale thing that Celeste Malloy was getting? Does that affect any of this? We'll talk about that when we come back.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk Leader.
We're back. It's Wednesday, the 28th day of May. I'm Andy. Carrie is here. Doug is here from the Water Conservancy District. You guys doing all right? Everything good?
Oh, yeah. We're doing great. Beautiful day, isn't it?
It really is. It's going to be a little warm and dry, but, you know.
A typical day in Utah.
Yeah. Imagine that. Well, Carrie, I mentioned it before we went to break, but maybe if you can talk a little bit about. So Celeste Malloy had proposed that they add to what they're calling the Big Beautiful Bill, some land sale, perhaps, to help with the infrastructure in places like Washington County. It got pulled out of the bill, so it's not happening, at least not right now. But how does that affect what we were talking about today with water and infrastructure?
Sure. I mean, we've been talking a lot about infrastructure this morning, and I think it's important to remember that in a water shortage year like this year, it's the infrastructure that saves us. So a lot of people think it's not necessarily a water shortage problem, it's a water infrastructure problem, because if you have enough infrastructure, you can weather those dry years. Mm-hmm. Washington County, the water district, has over $1 billion in infrastructure right now with reservoirs, about 300 miles of pipeline, pump stations, hydropower plants, water treatment facilities, most of which is unseen, as Doug mentioned. But we really appreciate Congresswoman Malloy's effort to secure some additional federal land for the water district for critical water projects. We had identified 23 parcels about 4,400 acres of federal land that we wanted to purchase at fair market price to use for critical infrastructure to serve the community. Things like expanded water treatment plants, new water storage facilities, storage tanks, irrigation ponds, pipelines for the regional reuse purification system. There was a long list of land that's needed. Most land in Washington County is owned by the federal government.
Right.
And so that amendment would have allowed us to acquire that land in a more turnkey and efficient process. Unfortunately, as you mentioned, it was pulled from the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so the district will continue to work with the federal agencies to acquire the needed land on a traditional basis moving forward.
So what does that mean exactly?
It just means that we'll continue to work with the federal government to acquire land parcels. One interesting example is Chief Toker Reservoir.
Mm-hmm.
Chief Toker Reservoir is actually one of the parcels that we requested. It's a parcel that is currently being used for a reservoir. Construction is well underway,
right,
but it's still not on land that's owned by the district.
It's federal land?
It's federal land.
Okay.
And so that was one of the parcels that was requested because it would allow us greater flexibility with the management of the system and also more collaborative local input on how that reservoir might be used recreationally. And so there was a lot of reasons why we requested those parcels. A lot of them are already being used for water infrastructure, which I think is interesting. I don't think most people realize that was the case. But we'll continue to work with the federal agencies to acquire parcels on an individual basis as needed rather than having one big lump purchase. They'll just be parceled individually.
So if we go to Sand Hollow, that's land that's owned by the county.
Actually, that land is owned by the water district.
Okay.
So
yeah.
So there's a mix of land that's either federal or district owned, but yes, that particular parcel is owned by the water district.
But you're saying then we go to Chief Toker, that is not owned by the district. What does that mean as far as recreation? You mentioned recreation. How will that change things?
It just requires us to collaborate more with the federal government. They have more input rather than allowing some of those decisions to be made at the local level. It just requires...
So instead of mom and dad, I'm taking my car out, it's mom and dad, can I borrow your car?
Yeah.
Kind of, right?
It's additional logistical coordination. You know, the ideal scenario is that the district would own the land where its infrastructure, resides.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay,
that's not always the case, especially in a county like ours where I think it's 87%. So don't quote me on that. But
yeah,
it's
a big number.
The high 80s, most of our land is federally owned, and it is very complicated, especially when you're trying to develop a regional system like the water district has, where you're crossing through federal land, private land, municipal land, it's state land.
Yeah.
It's tricky. It requires a lot of coordination. There's a reason why it takes decades to get projects permitted and built in our area and other regions throughout the world. It's because it's a very complicated process that involves multiple landowners and...
Well, if you wanted to put a bench down in federal land, you'd have to get a NEPA study, and it would take 3 years, right?
Think about we talk a lot about the pipelines. We have, just the district has about 300 miles of pipeline in the ground today. The municipalities would add thousands of miles of pipeline into the ground. The regional reuse system is going to add an additional 60 miles of district pipeline that's going to take water from our reclamation facilities and put it back into our municipalities for additional uses. That's additional land that is going to have to be acquired to meet the needs of the community going forward. So it's essential, critical infrastructure. The district will still need those 23 parcels that were identified in that amendment. We're just going to have to acquire them individually on an as-needed basis moving forward.
It's as far as the reuse, you mentioned reuse. I know you guys said that they brought city leaders out to San Diego and they learned about it and stuff. Is that happening? And if it is it already happening? Is it on the way?
It is. In fact, Chief Tucker Reservoir that we were just talking about is part of the regional reuse system. That will allow us to store water from the reclamation facility into that basin. The thing with reuse is Washington County has been doing reuse for years. Mm-hmm. We use reuse water right now to irrigate parks, golf courses, schools, some residential neighborhoods. For example, Desert Color is all irrigated with reuse water. Mm-hmm. And that system will significantly be expanding. The problem that we have with reuse right now is that when the demand is high in the summer months, that water is being put to use. But in the winter months, when the demand is not high, we don't have anywhere to store that water. So it's currently being returned to the river and flowing out of the state. And we're hoping that that reuse system, you know, the intention is to keep that water in our community so that we can continue to use it over and over again. Water is just too precious to use only once.
Yeah.
We don't have a lot of water. We need to use it as wisely and as efficiently as possible, and the reuse system will allow us to do that.
And part of that would be, I guess, building reservoirs that would hold reuse water, like Warner Valley, which we've been talking about for 100 years now. And is it ever actually going to happen, is the question.
Warner Valley continues to be a project that the Water District is looking at. It will eventually, it is projected to become the county's largest reservoir.
That blows folks away, I think. Well, no, Sand Hollow is it. What are you talking about?
No, it won't have as much surface area as Sand Hollow, but it will be deeper because it's in that natural ravine. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at our long-term water demand, additional storage is critical. And so Warner Valley is going to be a key component of our infrastructure system moving forward.
Not just for that reuse, but also for the flashy nature of the Virgin River. So sometimes the Virgin River has abundant water, too much water in it, right?
Yeah, we've learned, yes.
So we can fill up our reservoirs off of that, manage it conjunctively with the reuse water. Lots of interconnects are part of this project so that we can move water from one area of the county into another area. What Kerry was talking about, Warner Valley, I mean, the good thing about having a very large reservoir that's got a small surface area is less evaporation. So that's going to be much more efficient. When you have large, broad, shallow reservoirs, evaporation is a real threat. It's eating up part of your water supply. So
I know a lot of big cities in the West, Las Vegas, Phoenix, et cetera, use a lot of reuse water. And we talked with Zach about it last month, the toilet to tap, you know, ick factor, whatever. But are we headed that way sooner rather than later, you guys?
I think our plan is one that basically purifies and recovers that water back to reservoirs. So that water is, I mean, already the water in Quail Creek is not drinkable until you treat it to become drinking water. The water in Sand Hollow, do not dip a cup off your boat and chug the water in Sand Hollow. So basically all of our water supplies are not drinking water until we turn them into drinking water. So it's really about having good infrastructure that can treat water to a very high quality. What is probably our biggest threat, and Kerry was talking about that piece of legislation, one of our enemies is time. So sometimes you have a project that you could build over the course of 5 years, and it takes 15 years to do it because of some of these hurdles that we have to go through to be able to get the property and to conduct the studies and so forth. It all gets done, but it's a very sludgy process. And so,
to put it in water terms,
I went to a meeting in Texas, and there were engineers who worked their entire career on a particular reservoir, and that reservoir was not built during the entirety of their career. Like, they went from college into an organization, worked on a project for 25 years, and still didn't get to see it to completion.
Most water projects don't fail because of engineering. Engineers are brilliant. They can figure it out. Projects fail because of lack of public acceptance or political reasons. And engineers can figure it out. They can make it happen. But I think that's interesting. Is, you know, projects fail because of public perception or politics.
So that means engineers, the smart guy, they're getting it done, but it's really important for, say, a public relations person to make sure we understand that it's not going to go right from the toilet to your tap.
That's
like
correct.
Some article a few years ago said. It's not toilet to tap and help us overcome ick factor.
You know, I think it's really important to note that this has been done for multiple decades in other communities. It is proven safe technology. You mentioned the trip to San Diego that we took with our county leaders. I actually just got back last week. We took our state leaders and some of our legislators to look at some of these infrastructure facilities. Reuse water is very common. It's done in more than 80 communities throughout the U.S., and it's growing, especially in the desert Southwest. It's done worldwide in multiple countries. The treated reclaimed water will be cleaner than our river water. And most people don't realize that. And so it really does provide a very safe, reliable source of water that's drought resistant and locally controlled for Washington County. Reuse will provide about half of the water needed to serve the growth in our community over the next 20 years. Doug, did you have something to add?
I was just going to say, I mean, if people want to know more about this, Carrie's got some excellent information on our website.
So
you can learn more about how this water is collected, how it's treated, how it's going to be managed and handled. What the components are. Something else worth pointing out, all those parcels in Congresswoman Malloy's bill were all things that were already part of the public process. They were all projects that we had already proposed. They were previously identified. It was just an opportunity to expedite the ability to be able to start creating some of this infrastructure. And sometimes, Andy, I say time is one of our enemies, right? And especially when some of the substantial, meaningful projects can take easily more than a decade, not because it takes that long to build them, but because it takes that long to sludge through the process to be able to build them.
The permitting process.
The red tape. All right, I got to get a commercial break in. Speaking of red tape, we'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
All right, welcome back. I'm Andy. Doug Bennett, Water Conservation Manager for the Water Conservancy District, is here as well as Carrie Rathke. Carrie, very rarely, she's always here. She very rarely actually talks on the air. So,
Carrie,
it's good to hear your voice.
Thank you. It's fun to be here.
Appreciate you being here. I really do. We were talking about the permitting process and the slow, almost snail-like, maybe, movement of trying to get permitted, trying to get things done. My wife, I don't know if you guys don't know my wife, but she is a very get things done kind of person. She has no time for paperwork. She has no time. She's just like, let's get it done. And you know, if she comes and sees there's a project, I'll be like, yeah, we're going to evaluate and measure. She's like, nonsense. Let's do this. And she'll go and do it. That's for someone like her, that would probably drive, and for someone like you guys, probably drives you crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah, I used to say I'm a very impatient person, but that's not a good attribute, right? Nobody wants to be with the impatient person. So now I say I'm extremely expeditious.
I like that.
Put a positive spin on it.
So, I mean, we laugh about it. We joke. We use words like sludge about it. But can anything be done about it?
Well, I think this was, you know, that bill was an attempt to try and do something about it. But again, there were obviously, it was tied in with a lot of other stuff. I think all of our parcels were identified. You could find them in previous documents the Water District had put out. We could tell you exactly what was planned to go there. So that was a well-intentioned attempt to try and expedite things there. But it was a very complex issue, right? Multiple states, lots of stakeholders in a very complicated bill. So
down it goes, at least out it goes for now. So when you get frustrated like that and you're trying to work, I mean, the Warner Valley, perfect example, but the Lake Powell Pipeline, another example. It's funny, when that bill first came out, I was like, well, this is just a thin disguise to get the Lake Powell Pipeline approved and stuff, just, you know.
Yeah, and that land transaction actually had nothing to do with the Lake Powell Pipeline.
Nothing to do with it, yeah.
And if you looked at the map and the 23 parcels, 4,000 acres, you could see exactly where they were on the map, that, you know, where the Water District was seeking that land. And it was not related to the Lake Powell Pipeline. But the permitting process is problematic. It does need to be streamlined. Everyone acknowledges that it needs to be streamlined. It's just going to take, I don't know, it's going to take somebody with a lot of time and patience and willingness to collaborate with others and a lot of compromise to get that streamlined to be more efficient.
And you mentioned, Doug, it's not just about, you know, I mean, we have the DOGE, right, the Department of Government. It's not just about going in and cutting things, because sometimes you'll go in and say, all right, we're going to cut this X number of employees out. Well, guess what? You just got rid of the two people that actually know about our project, right?
Yeah, and sometimes those people have years of experience and work on our project, and so it can set you back where you feel like you're starting over again.
Yeah, which is counterproductive to the end result.
Yeah, so we want to be efficient, right? We want it to be efficient, but it's got to be smart in the way that you make it efficient.
We want it to be efficient, but we also want to be environmentally sensitive. I mean, right. We care about our community. We live here too. And so we're not upset with the process. We're just upset with the hurdles that are put in the way of achieving deadlines and being more turnkey with the needed approvals.
If I'm going to throw a hypothetical, if we didn't have all these really difficult permitting processes, how different would the county look right now, water-wise? If we just said, you got a rubber stamp, they said yes to everything you wanted to do, would we have Warner Valley already? Would we have a Lake Powell Pipeline already? Would all that stuff be a reality?
The Water District is very cautious in developing projects as they are needed. And I think that you'll continue to see that trend moving forward. And so the community might look different. There might be different projects than what we have today, but there would still be infrastructure. Doug, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I don't know. I mean, it's I think some of the projects would move much faster. Mm-hmm. But one of the challenges, one of the things we don't have much control over is the speed at which this community is
moving,
right?
Mm, yeah.
So I think historically this county has always exceeded the growth expectations. And so even when you're planning into the far future, you're saying this is where we think we're headed, and then more people move here. And a lot of people ask us, how come you don't stop that? Well, that's not how it works. Yeah. So it doesn't even work that way for cities. Cities give out the building permits, but even they have limits on what they're able how they might be able to stand in the way of a proposed project. And so while it sounds simple just to say enough already, that's not how things work. People have land they've been paying taxes on. They do have a right to develop it. What we can do is make sure they develop it in a way that's much more water efficient. And that's what we're spending our time on.
That's what you've done,
that's
right?
Yeah,
I mean,
absolutely.
New builds now have a way more water restrictions than something that was built in the 90s.
Yes,
the
80s. So we don't want to create some of the challenges we had from the past. And if you're on one of those older properties, I've got lots of money to be able to help you do a project if you want to reinvent your landscaping or put in a smart controller. So,
wow. Nice. Again, let's go over that smart controller.
Sure.
How do I get that?
All of the information on rebates is available on WCWCD.gov. So Washington County Water Conservancy District.gov, and go to conservation and incentives, and you'll see all of the information there about all of our programs.
All right. We can get incentive for smart controllers. We can get rather rebates for swapping out maybe the, you know, flipping
replacing,
the grass.
Yeah, replacing grass.
Are there other things? Maybe
grass, we're, and then a toilet rebate as well.
There's a toilet rebate.
Yeah. For if you have really old toilets, they're going to qualify for that. So if it's an old property with, you know, 30-year-old toilets, you probably can get a rebate to help you get a new toilet.
So maybe something that's already. My house is only 8 years old, so probably
I already have an efficient toilet.
So. Okay. Okay.
Good job.
And they I know with all our appliances, right, that use water, they have the energy ratings and how much water and energy and everything they use, right?
Yeah.
That's important. So if you have an old dishwasher or an old washer dryer or something.
Yeah, dishwashers, dishwashers wear out more frequently than other appliances, so they tend to get replaced. But people would be shocked. Your dishwasher is super efficient. Whole load of dishes usually happens with 3 to 5 gallons of water. So you can't even wash them in the sink with less water than that. So use your dishwasher. It's a super efficient appliance.
But try to wait till it's at least most of the way full,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Don't be running it with 3 plates and a cup in it.
Sure.
All right, Doug Bennett, Carrie Rathke from the Washington County Water Conservancy District, thank you guys for coming
on.
Learned a lot today. And again, I'm going to take you up on that whole rebate with the smart meter and everything. I'm going to do that. So we're out of time. Thanks, folks, for listening. We'll be back tomorrow.